So far, they'd found no booby traps set for them. It was usually Terra Tactics to mine their own spoor, and Sean pondered their failure to do so. These could be untrained bandits, or they might lack the light plastic anti-personnel mines, or they could be unaware of the pursuit, or, worst thought, they could be planning some surprises later. We'll deal with that one when it comes up. Matatu pulled up again.
They cooked here last night.
He pointed to the remains of a campfire, and there were the marks where they had sat while they rested and ate. A few black safari ants were scurrying about the site, foraging for the scraps of food that they'd spilled, and there were more cigarette butts. Search, Sean ordered. Job will have tried to get a message to us. While Matatu and Pumula went over the area carefully but quickly, Sean glanced at his watch. 1600 hours. They'd been going just over 3 hours. They still had plenty of daylight and a good chance to catch them before dark.
Here's where they put the Mim's litter, Matatu pointed out the marks in the earth. Here, she stood.
Sean studied her footprints, smaller, neater, and narrower than the big boots of her captors. When she walked, she had favoured her leg, dragging the toe. Did you find anything? He demanded roughly. Did Job leave a message?
Nothing.
Matatu shook his head. All right, we'll drink now, he ordered, and handed out salt tablets from his pack. He didn't have to caution them to self-control. 3 swallows each from the bottles, and then they screwed the stoppers tightly closed. They had paused for less than 5 minutes. Let's go, said Sean. An hour later, they found where the raiders had slept that night. The fact that they had moved on after eating and not slept beside their cooking fire told Sean that they were trained troops. Search again, Sean ordered. Any information that Job could have left for them would be valuable.
Nothing,
Matatu reported back a few minutes later, and Sean felt a prick of disappointment. All right, keep going, he ordered, and was about to turn away when something made him pause, and he looked around the campsite.
Where did the Mim Sahib sleep? He demanded. There,
Matatu pointed. Somebody, probably Job, had cut an armful of leaves and grass for her mattress. Her body had flattened the pile. Sean squatted beside it and carefully sifted through it, searching for any clues. There was nothing. He lifted away the last few leaves and was beginning to rise to his feet. He was disappointed. The feeling that she had left something for him had been very powerful. So much for ESP, he grunted, and then noticed the button, half buried in the dust under the mattress of straw. He picked it out and stood up. It was a brass button from the waistband of her denim jeans, engraved Ralph Hutton. Designer jeans, that's my ducky. He slipped it into his pocket, but it doesn't tell me anything. He broke off. Unless. He knelt again and gently brushed aside the dust under where the button had lain. He was right. She'd used the button as a marker, and beneath it had buried a scrap of cardboard, the flap torn from the lid of a packet of cheap Portuguese cigarillos. It was not more than 2 inches long and half as wide, very little space for the message she had written with a charcoal stick scavenged from the fire. 15 Renamo. That was invaluable intelligence, confirming Matatu's estimate of numbers, and now at least he knew who they were dealing with. Renamo. Cave? The next word puzzled him. Cave? And then suddenly he realized it was the old public schoolboy warning from the Latin caveat, beware. He smiled despite himself. Where did she ever learn a limey expression like that? Then he remembered she was a lawyer and read on. Cavey, they expect you. She and Job would have overheard them discussing the pursuit. That information was just as valuable. All okay. And she had signed it C. He stared at the scrap of cardboard, holding it in the palm of his hand as though it were a relic of the true cross. "You little beauty, you," he whispered. "You've got to be the brightest, gutsiest." He shook his head in wonder, a choking sensation in his throat. For the very first time, he admitted his longing for her, and then suppressed it firmly as he came to his feet. There was no time nor opportunity for such self-indulgence now. "Renamo," he told Matatu and Pumula, "you were right. There are 15 of them. They know we are following. We can expect an ambush." They both looked grave, and Sean glanced at his wristwatch. "We can catch them before dark." Within an hour, they came upon the first ambush that the Renamo had set for them. 4 men had lain beside the trail at the point where the causeway across the floodplains joined the main forest on the higher ground. The ambush had been cunningly sighted on the far edge of a narrow flay, across open ground with a good field of fire. It had been abandoned only a short time before they came up to it. "They're putting down a rolling rearguard." Sean felt queasy at the risk he had taken with such a reckless pursuit. In the dust were the distinctive double marks left by the bipod of an RPD light machine gun, one of the simplest and yet the most deadly effective of all guerrilla weapons. If he had led his men into the flay while the gun was still in position, it would have all been over in a few hellish seconds. He'd been pushing too hard, not taking even elementary precautions. His concern for Claudia had unbalanced his judgment. Renamo had pulled out just before they reached the flay. They judged the time of his arrival with disconcerting accuracy. The margin had been far too narrow. The crew of the RPD would have moved back and re-sighted the ambush farther along the trail in order not to fall too far behind their main party. "Flankers out," Sean ordered reluctantly. "Ambush precautions." It would slow them to half their previous speed. Now it would be impossible to catch up with Renamo before nightfall. 3 men were too few. It left only Matatu on the spur, and Sean and Pumula on the flanks. They had a single weapon between them, the big bore slow-firing double. They were going in against trained bushfighters, armed with automatic weapons. And they were expected. "Just another name for suicide," Sean told himself. But despite the odds, he had to restrain himself from quickening the pace. In the centre, Matatu whistled. At that moment, he was out of Sean's line of sight. Even though it wasn't a warning signal, Sean fell flat and carefully checked his front and both flanks before he stood up again and went to join him. Matatu was squatting beside the trail with his loincloth drawn up modestly between his legs, but his expression was worried. He stabbed a finger at the spur without speaking, and Sean saw immediately what was troubling him. "Where the hell did they come from?" It was a protest more than a question. The odds against them had just been multiplied many times, and for the first time Sean felt the lead weight of despair on his shoulders. The original band of Renamo had been reinforced by an even larger group. At a glance it looked like a full company of infantry. "How many?" he demanded of Matatu. And this time even he couldn't give an exact figure. The tracks were overlapped and confused. Matatu took a sniff, using the ritual to disguise his uncertainty. He sneezed, and his eyes ran with tears, which he wiped away with his thumbs. Then he held up the spread fingers of both hands and shut them 4 times. 40? Matatu grimaced apologetically and showed another set of fingers. "Between 40 and 50. Sean unscrewed his water bottle and took a mouthful. The water was hot as soup, but he gargled with it before he swallowed. "I will count them later," Matatu promised, "when I have learnt them all, but now..." He spat on the trampled ground, mortified by his failure. "How far behind are we?" Sean demanded. And Matatu used his forefinger like the hour hand of a clock to indicate a segment of the sky. 3 hours, Sean translated. "We'll never catch them before nightfall." When it was dark, Sean said, "We'll eat while we wait for the moon." But when it rose, it was only a sliver of silver, soon blotted out by cloud, and there was not enough light to follow even that broad, clear spur. Sean thought of keeping going blindly through the night, trying to get ahead of them and then shadowing them, hoping for some fortuitous opportunity to reach Claudia and Job and release them. "That's dreaming in technicolor," he told himself. They had been going hard for days now and were all of them tottering on the edge of exhaustion. Blundering around in the dark, they would either run on top of the Renamo night guards or would miss them completely. "We'll sleep now." He was forced to give up at last. As Renamo knew they were being followed, they might send a detachment back and try and surprise them. Sean went into Laga for the night, well off the trail, in a thicket of thorn that would snag an attacker attempting to sneak up on them. They all desperately needed rest, and he would rely on the thorn rather than posting sentries. The night was icy cold, and they lay in a huddle, sharing each other's body warmth. Sean was already sliding into the black hole of exhaustion when Matatu's whisper called him back.
"There is one of them,"
Matatu began, and then broke off, and Sean opened his eyes with resignation. "Tell me," he invited drowsily.
"There is one of these Renamo I have seen before."
"You know one of them?" Sean came fully awake.
"I think so, but it was long ago, and I cannot remember where."
Sean was silent as he considered that simple statement and what it really entailed. Sean would have had difficulty remembering the faces of every person he had met in, say, the last 10 years. And here was Matatu, bemoaning the fact that he could not instantly recognize a single set of footprints, which he had seen last years previously out of a jungle of other tracks. Though he had seen Matatu perform similar feats so many times before, yet even he felt a creep of doubt at Matatu's claim. "Go to sleep, you silly little bugger," he smiled in the darkness, and took him by the scruff of the neck and shook the little man's woolly head with rough affection. "Perhaps you'll dream his name in your sleep." Sean dreamed of Claudia. She was running naked through a dark forest. The trees were black and leafless with crooked limbs. A pack of wolves pursued her. They also were black as night, but with glistening white fangs and red lolling tongues. Claudia called his name as she ran, and her skin was pale and luminous as the moon. He tried to go to her, but his legs dragged as though he waded through a pool of treacle. He tried to call her name, but his tongue was lead in his mouth and no sound came from his throat. He awoke with a hand roughly shaking his shoulder, and he tried to shout out again, but it came out in a garbled slur.
"Wake up," Matatu shook him. "You were crying and moaning. Renamo will hear you."
He sat up quickly. The cold seemed to have frozen the muscles in his legs, and the terror of the dream was still upon him. It took him seconds to focus on reality and remember where he was.
"You're getting past it, boyo."
He was humiliated. A scout slept soundlessly and awoke to immediate awareness, or had his throat cut while he was grunting and snoring.
"It will be light enough soon," Matatu whispered.
Already the dawn chorus of bird calls tinkled and chirruped through the forest, and he could make out the latticework of thorn branches against the sky.
"Let's go." Sean stood up.
While the sun was still low and the dew was on the grass, they came up to the dry riverbed in which Renamo had bivouacked for the night. The band had moved on again at first light, but could not be far ahead. Matatu picked Claudia's footprints out of the ruck in the soft sand of the riverbed.
"She moves with less pain," he told Sean. "The leg is healing, but Job and Idan are still carrying her. Here she climbed into the litter."
Matatu left the distinctive feminine prints and hovered over another set of larger male tracks that to Sean were indistinguishable from all the others, except that whoever had made them wore boots with a double herringbone pattern on the sole.
"I know him," Matatu whispered. "I know the way this one walks."
He shook his head in frustration and turned away. They went forward with extreme caution now. The trail led them directly towards the higher ground along the escarpment of the valley, and soon they entered the foothills. Whoever commanded the Renamo column knew exactly where he was headed. Sean was expecting at any moment to make contact with the rearguard of the column. He dreaded the thought
that the first warning they might receive could be the wicked crackle of an RPD light machine gun firing at a cyclic rate of 600 rounds a minute.